Fitzgibbons, who is assistant professor of surgery at Georgetown University Medical Center. She attended the Dartmouth Brown Medical School program and completed her general surgery residency at the Lay Clinic in Burlington, Massachusetts. During her residency, she spent an additional 2 years as a surgical research fellow at Boston Children's Hospital and received her master's degree in education from Harvard. She now serves as the clerkship director for general surgery and the associate program director for general surgery at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital. And she's going to be discussing the development of our current model of medical school education and alternatives being developed across specialties. Dr. Fitzgibbons.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So thank you for giving me a little bit of time to share some thoughts about medical school. I have no disclosures. So I guess the way I would frame it is that as an educator, when I think about what we're trying to accomplish with our medical students, I generally think in terms of things like quality, value, what Nancy covered, which was cost. I think about the quality of the student that we're graduating today. I think about how much it costs to do that. And I think about whether or not our stakeholders, our patients, our colleagues, our profession, agree that we're providing high value, or maybe not. So as surgeons, I think we're very familiar with the idea of value-based healthcare. We might still be working out how to define that as a profession, but we certainly see it everywhere. And honestly, the scene is basically no different in education, right? We have students and educators who are just constantly grappling with this idea of value-based education. And for me, I think value is sort of a deceptively simple concept. In some ways, I mostly think about it in terms of cost and quality. So you can fold a lot of elements into this equation, but I like to think of it as a simple fraction because math is not my strong suit. So as cost goes up and the quality maybe of our medical school product goes down, our value would go down, and then as the cost goes down and our quality goes up, we would have great value. And if you're a visual thinker, you basically want to be here, right? High quality, relatively low cost. But for our students, unless, say, you happen to be enrolled in New York, it's really expensive. So I clearly timed my pursuit of medicine the wrong decade, if this is what's going to happen. But for the rest of us who don't have a lot of funding from Home Depot, which is where a lot of that money came from, it's really expensive. And Nancy sort of covered this a little bit. I thought it was sort of fascinating that the AAMC just has all of this data freely available to you, and it dates back to 1996, 97, that academic year. So if you compare private, as she did, with and public, this is adjusted for the fact that in the data set they didn't include healthcare in 97. And then also you have to adjust for inflation. But that's basically the increase over the past two decades. Just for fun, I thought I would look at my own institution at Georgetown. I guess it's really expensive. So we're just $30 shy of $60,000 this year. That's in comparison to 20 years ago. Fortunately, the cost of living in DC is just really, really low. So at least we have that going for us. And this is generating a lot of anxiety. Our anxiety is that our students are going into massive amounts of debt, and maybe they wish they were going to become a family practitioner and they can't. Or we have ongoing issues with diversity in our field, and maybe that is generated by this concern over student debt and access to medical education. So when I think about the question of what we're doing with medical school and maybe the fourth year of medical school, I find it helpful to look back and figure out where we got our existing system. And as we sort of touched on, we all are relatively familiar with the traditional curricular map. And this is actually a relatively modern take on the current curriculum. Just one example, we basically have two-ish years, maybe a little bit less now, of that sort of preclinical coursework, medicine, sort of medical knowledge acquisition. Then we've got some amount of time, probably about a year in the hospital, doing our core clerkship experience, and then there's some amount of time, whatever's left in the 4 years, where you spend time doing interesting things like research or interviews or away rotations or, in my case, a vacation. But the question is where that came from. I thought that was an interesting question. Why 4 years? Like, who came up with that? Why 2 years of preclinical? When did we decide that that was what we wanted to do with our structure? So a lot of surgical educators will take that back to 1910. For those of you in the audience familiar with the Flexner Report, that was a report commissioned by the Carnegie Foundation in 1910, basically to take stock and try and figure out what the situation was in America. Because at the time, there was no regulation, zero. Some medical schools were 2 years, which sounds appealing now. Some were 4 years, completely unregulated product. So Abraham Flexner was commissioned by the Carnegie Foundation to go out and literally visit all 150 medical schools, including Dartmouth, which was one of my alma maters, and try and figure out what the deal was with the quality and the value. And in the wake of that, he basically gave us a massive F on our report card, and about half either merged or closed over the following couple of decades. What I think is even more interesting, though, is what happened after that. After we had this massive purge, what did we end up with? And what we ended up with tracks a lot to who Abraham Flexner was and what he was interested in. So he was not a physician. He had no MD. He was an educator. He was a school teacher, actually. He'd gone to Hopkins and to Harvard. He was from a big family in Kentucky. They loved high-quality education. And he had sort of a fascination with the European model of education. So that's what attracted the Carnegie Foundation to him. And then he loved the German model of medical education. And the German model, he loved sort of educators and surgeons like Bill Roth, who's sort of front and center here. And that model was a four-year model. It's a four-year model with 2 years of hardcore science and research. And the idea at the end of this was that you graduate physician scientists. That's what they were trying to graduate. People who could advance science and medicine. If you think about that, that sort of says a lot about what we currently have sort of included, even subtly, in our medical school curriculum. What's also interesting about the Flexner Report, though, is what he does not include. So he does not include anything about professionalism or communication skills, things that we now, in our day and age, include as core competencies for our physicians. There's no mention of the ethics of being a physician. That's all missing. It's pure physician-scientist. So when you think about the idea of value, and we know that the price tag is $60,000 per year, we're trying to figure out exactly what constitutes the quality. If we're now trying to produce medical students who have all six core competencies as they enter their internship and their GME programming, are we actually delivering that right now? Do we need the 4 years but maybe redistributed? So we have obviously been doing a lot of work on this, and this is not me. This is lots of other people who've asked exactly the same question. I just happen to be talking about it. One of the main mechanisms here is that they've tried to provide a little bit of vocabulary for us. That's really what I feel like has been happening over the past decade. People are trying to consider the question of what we are delivering in medical school and then providing that vocabulary. So that's what the Milestone Project is for me. For those of you who are on residency review committees or the CCCs, you're very familiar with this, but they are specialty-specific, objective, sort of observable skills or demonstrations of knowledge that you can track over time, which is great. It's, in my mind, very similar to the infancy developmental scale, and that is not pejorative in any way. That's literally just where my mind goes every time I see them. So it's like objective measures where you can say, yes, that kid turned over, rolled over onto his belly at 5 months, and I feel good that we are on track with our development. So within that, for this talk, though, when we're thinking about our graduates, the thing that's most relevant for me is this level one. That's what I want my medical students to be coming into residency looking like. They should be like early level ones, and there's a lot of language right? We have a dozen or so milestones in general surgery. Other fields have several dozen, and they've all detailed these level one performance measures for their core competencies. That's great. I think that sets the tone for what we're trying to execute in medical school. But the problem with milestones is that they're specialty specific, right? I've got some for general surgery, I've got some for ortho, I've got like a gazillion for pediatrics. There's nothing consistent about that. Trying to deliver that as a medical school is a little complicated. So the AAMC sort of worked at the problem from the other angle and developed the entrustable professional activities. The genius of that is that they are very general. That is for everybody. So all 200 of the medical students who graduate each year from Georgetown, hypothetically, might want to be very good at executing these entrustable professional activities if their receiving program director is going to sort of look at them and think that they got a good deal from us. When I think about all of these things, milestones, the core competencies, the EPAs, that's all parts of what will eventually be the quality piece in this equation, right? $60,000 a year, what am I producing? Ideally, I'm producing a bunch of medical students who can execute entrustable professional activities and are robustly filling out their core competencies according to my milestone level one. That would be my ideal. So then the question is, like, are we doing that? I'm going to hedge and say I have no idea. I can tell you that what we've done a really good job of is defining what we want. We've got some great vocabulary in the milestones and the EPAs, and I think that's a first start. Clarity in terms of what we want is great for the learner. They know what they're supposed to learn. It's great for me. I know what I'm supposed to teach. Maybe it's great for oversight organizations because they know how to measure me and compare me to other programs. I would not say that we're doing that yet. There's a lot of press about whether or not we're doing that yet, and I would say that in general, the volume of academic productivity around the transition between fourth year of medical school and internship speaks to the fact that there's a perceived gap. The reason we're studying it so hard and we're so interested in it is because program directors are not saying on a routine basis, absolutely, that person basically just walked into my institution and was ready to go. I like that picture because that's actually Georgetown where my students were taking a surgery ASCII as part of their surgery clerkship. So to close, what I would say is that looking towards the future, I have like one really sort of optimistic hope and one slightly secret dread. So my optimistic hope is that when we think about all the creative things that we could do with medical school, given the price tag, that we are going to incorporate some lessons learned from adult educational theory. And my personal favorite is personalization of education and the flexibility of a curriculum. And that is happening, even at Georgetown, which is historically an extremely traditional medical school. Flexibility and personalization of the education curriculum is not an easy thing to deliver, but that would be my hope for what we do with medical school in the future. My secret dread is, we're doing the flexibility thing in residency. I just put this up there to remind me, but the flexibility in training, the early specialization, all that's happening in the GME programming. It speaks, sort of hints at the possibility of it happening in the UME world too. My secret dread is that we've done a lot of defining, and I think when people define things like EPAs and milestones, their next impulse is to test, potentially high-stakes testing. There's a lot of talk about high-stakes testing to enter internship, high-stakes testing to do your intern work of history gathering, consent gathering, or ordering labs, admitting patients. High-stakes testing is a real double-edged sword. I think we all know that as educators. I worry a lot about the problem of teaching to the test, and I think that that is more than just a catchphrase. Teaching to the test is real. When we identify a high-stakes assessment, we are defining the curriculum that our educators are going to execute. And you need to think very carefully, I think, consequently, about what exactly you're going to put in that high-stakes test. But at the end of the day, I'm basically an optimist. So I try not to think about that too much. And mostly I think about all of the extremely creative things people are doing with the education curriculum in the United States right now. I think it is incredibly inspiring. There's a lot of work and research and creativity. And that is essentially what the last two panelists are going to talk about. So I'm going to turn it over to them. Thanks.